And welcome to this particular edition of the Alternate History Show, where I'm talking to another author, and he's been on the show before, actually. He was involved with one of our discussions that we were having. Dan Benson is back with me now. Hello, Dan.
Hi, Ben. Nice to talk to you.
It's great to talk to you as well. How did you get interested in alternate history?
Getting started, I suppose, David Turtledove, right? If I got his first name right.
Harry.
I knew it was wrong. And then when the internet was invented, the Alternate History Forum, where I was a big fan of, I don't remember his name, but he wrote Green Antarctica. I also really liked The Lands of Red and Gold. And both of those actually were inspirations for The World's Other Side. And since then, I've written some short stories, which were in Tales of Alternate Earths, Volumes 1, 2, and 3. The first one won an award. It won the Sidewise Award. I'm also a big fan of Quantum Branching on DeviantArt, who does these amazing alternate history maps with huge map keys that tell you lots of fun world-building details. And I actually got him to make a map for the story that appears in the second Tales from Alternate Earths anthology.
Well, let's talk The World's Other Side then. Pertinent, I suppose, at this juncture to ask you to tell us about the general premise of it, really. What were you intending to do when you wrote it?
Those are two interestingly different questions. I'll start with the intention. My wife took me for a trip for my birthday to Istanbul. Bulgaria was once part of the Ottoman Empire, and so traveling to Istanbul is a very familiar experience. The languages are different, but Bulgarian still has a lot of Turkish words in it, and the architecture and the people and the way that they dress and the food that they eat is all very similar. They might deny it, but from my perspective, it's very similar. And we were talking about the clash of cultures and Islam and the West, and about what was then the current argument about Muslim women wearing headscarves in public. And in Bulgaria, headscarves on women is traditional for Muslims and Christians. And I was thinking about, like, what if there was some foreign conqueror who came in and they don't wear any shirts at all, and they think it's terrible oppression that European women have to wear shirts and we have to get rid of the chemise, you know? And so I was thinking, well, what sort of world would that be? And so I came up with this alternate history scenario of Australia didn't break off from Antarctica. Instead, the whole supercontinent moved slightly north, and it was colonized about 40,000 years ago. And a civilization developed there that conquered the Northern Hemisphere around 1000 AD. And so now Eurasia and North America are either still colonial or post-colonial states of the Gondwanans. They don't wear shirts. They think they're against religion, although in fact they have a religion, they just don't call it that. And they're very convinced that they know what's right. There are three cultures in the story. There's the Gondwanans, and then there's the Wapils, I call them, and they're descendants of refugees from England. But the story takes place in the Illinois Republic, which is more or less Illinois. And the dominant culture there are the Illinois people, who are based on the real Inuka people, who spoke the Illinois language, who lived in Illinois before the Europeans arrived. And they're related to people who still exist, who are called the Miami tribe. I got a lot of good information about them and their history and culture from the Miami University and Information Center. And so all of these three cultures have very different ideas about what is the right thing to do. And the Illinois wear a medium amount of clothing, and the Gondwanans wear a lot less clothing, and the Wapils wear a lot more clothing.
A Gondwanan is staying with a Wapil family, isn't she? So that's where it all comes together.
She's shocked to find out that her study abroad was going to be more complicated than she thought when her advisor, who is also a Gondwanan, but who's been living in Illinois for a long time, for reasons of his own, puts her into a homestay with the Wapils. It's not something that she really was planning to do, and she's never heard of Wapils before. She once dated a Gothic guy, so she knows a little bit about Germanic languages, and that's how her advisor justified this whole thing.
There's an interesting incident regarding milk as well.
Because Gondwanans are lactose intolerant. In fact, the way they think about it, native Eurasians are unusually lactose tolerant. Her professor has bizarre theories about why this might be, but it's a shock for her and for everyone around her when she first accidentally drinks milk.
It's sort of compounded, isn't it, by the fact that she drinks beer at the same time, almost at the same time.
Right. The Gondwanans don't care much about alcohol one way or the other, but the Alinwa, for them, it's illegal. They think about it the way we think about cocaine or heroin, and it's part of the economy of Wapilokonki, where the Wapils live, is making beer and selling it. Bootlegging is an important part of their little economy, and it's illegal as hell. I'm not sure how well justified this world building is, because unlike heroin, you can make alcohol in your bathtub. So having it be illegal is one thing, but enforcing that law, like anyone could be making it. The Alinwa don't make alcohol, even though they probably could and get away with it, because they think it's evil.
Tell us about some of the characters.
So I told you about Bounce, who is a Gondwanan student who's come to Alinwa to do a study abroad. Then there's George, who is the oldest son of her host family and the man of the house, because both of his parents have been exiled to a penal work colony in the Yukon. Then there's Wentama, who's a police officer, who's new and has been put on to the Wapilokonki beat, and they get tangled up with each other. And there's an interesting thing there, where in the last round of revisions I did before I started serializing this book, I thought that George was the protagonist and Bounce was the relationship character, as they say.
Yeah.
And I found when I reread it that I was wrong, that Bounce was the protagonist and the antagonist is Wentama, and George is more like the MacGuffin. He's the thing that Bounce wants to get, and Wentama, it's his job to stop her, because in fact George is a criminal. That's not a spoiler, because in the first paragraph he commits a crime that Wentama has to prosecute him.
Yeah, I find it interesting as well, in particular because of the attitudes towards money and the state of George in particular.
He likes money, but he doesn't like the state. He and his people have zero participation in the state, so for them it's an imposition. Meanwhile, the Alinwa think that they are very generous hosts, and the grandchildren of the refugees who they rescued back 60 or 70 years ago are ungrateful slobs who don't deserve to stay there anymore. And this basic inability to see the world through the other one's eyes makes all of the bad things in the plot happen.
How long have you been writing it?
Well, I've been writing it for 10 years. That birthday trip to Istanbul was before my daughter was born, so longer than 10 years. But I dusted it off after a long hiatus and read it again and decided that it would be a good way to experiment with serial publishing. So I started serializing it on my Patreon and then on Royal Road and then on Substack. So it's now available on all three platforms. On Patreon, it is exactly 2 weeks ahead of the other ones. So that gives people an incentive to join my Patreon. But the whole thing will eventually become available for free on Royal Road and Substack.
Tell us about some of the differences that people would expect from what we know in real life compared to this world, and some of the similarities as well, because I noticed quite a few reading the book myself.
Did you notice similarities or differences?
A lot of both, actually.
I think that there are certain patterns that keep emerging in real history, and there are certain things that you can reasonably expect will happen in a given situation, like the resentment on both sides between the Wapils and the Alinwa.
Yeah.
It has parallels all over the world, and this was my way of thinking about them and talking about them and looking at their causes and hopefully solutions. This is a world whose age of exploration was 500 years before our history's age of exploration, and which was colonized from the southern hemisphere north. So like, for example, in North America, they use the Aztec calendar. The Gondwanans didn't impose that calendar, but they met the Aztecs first, and the Aztecs got a technological boost and ran a brief tyranny for a while and conquered the northern continent before that broke apart. And now we're in this sort of post-totalitarian small nation state that's trying to put itself back together and make some kind of regional partnership with its neighbors, I was thinking about Georgia. What other similarities and differences did you see?
There was mention of social media, apart from anything else, and other bits and pieces like that. You had drones and all that kind of stuff. You sort of alluded to this a little bit earlier on, but of course, as the Gondwanas don't wear clothes, they use something called insulate, which I sort of get the idea of it anyway, but I didn't quite know exactly what it involved.
I got that idea from reading about the Fuegans, the native people of Tierra del Fuego, who were killed by the colonizers when they existed. They lived in a very cold place, but the records say they didn't wear clothing.
Yes.
Instead, they covered themselves with grease, and that insulated them. Gondwana is north of Antarctica, but it's south of Australia, so it gets very cold. They also have other cold adaptations, like they have relatively shorter arms and legs and a relatively more spherical body shape. They get around okay, and a lot of them in modern times ride around on float chairs. You had mentioned the drones. The drones are interesting because I started writing this in 2012 when drones weren't yet such a big deal, and they weren't such a huge deal in war. And I imagined something that doesn't look very much like a real drone. They look like robots without legs that hover on magnetic suspension fields. So they're much more proper science fiction than the reality.
I was also struck by the differences. Well, first of all, a common aspect of English history in particular, centuries ago, of course, was a person would be named after their profession. So if you were called, if you were a baker, you'd be called Baker. And George, interestingly enough, his surname is Boatman, isn't it? That tradition has survived in
right.
this timeline.
Right. And they even talk about changing people's names. Like you used to be Joan Stay at Home, but now you're Joan Nurse. So they really are professions. Partly it's an old English tradition, but it's also an attempt by these people to map their names onto the Gondwana naming system, which has become standard around the world. And in the Gondwana naming system, you have a nickname that people give you, for example, Bounce. And then you have a skin name, which is a real thing, which is used by many different tribes in Australia. And it tells you who you're allowed to marry. It was a way of keeping track of who was too closely related to who else, so yes. they shouldn't marry each other. And then there's a third thing, which is a reference number. That's a weird thing that Gondwanans do. And so English-speaking people thought that the skin name was a Christian name. So a lot of people are named George, because there are only like seven skin names.
Yeah.
So everyone is called George something. He's actually named John George, because John is his real skin name. And then what for Bounce is a nickname, for him is his profession. So he's John George Boatman, and his sister is Joan something else Nurse.
Yes.
I had this all on a complicated document that I don't have access to at the moment.
I think Joan is Joan Mary Nurse, if I remember
Mary,
rightly.
Thank you.
That's all good. And I guess we should touch on the breast as a sexual object, because that's a dividing line in this scenario, isn't it? And quite
right.
an embarrassing one.
So as far as Bounce is concerned, her breasts are, I mean, they're not nothing, but they're like a
yes.
beautiful smile or something like that.
Yeah.
She doesn't think they're such a big deal. And like at the last minute before she meets her host family, her advisor is like, so you're wearing a shirt, right?
Yeah.
And she's like, no, they only care about that thing in horrible, barbaric backwaters. Why would I have to worry about that here? Meanwhile, her host family is scandalized and they can't do anything until they found something to cover her up with. And then it turns out that the insulate that she has on isn't really compatible with woolen sweaters. It's very uncomfortable.
The whole setup seems very uncomfortable as well, generally, as she sort of complains about, or at least thinks to herself at various points. Dan, what are your plans for the future? Can we expect any more alternate history publishing from you in the future?
Yeah, absolutely. The World's Other Side, depending on which platform you're on, is either 3 chapters or 6 or 7 chapters available. The rest of it will come out probably before Christmas, if I've done my calendar correctly. After that, I don't want to give an exact date yet, but the next thing to be serialized will be a story about a soldier in the Russo-Turkish War, an army medic who deserts from the Russian army and stumbles across a cave full of crypto-Thracians.
As you
do. It turns out they've just been hiding all this time. and they aren't really extinct after all. That story is called Wealth Giver, and I'll start serializing it by next fall at the latest, depending on how long it takes to do the final revision.
How do people keep up to date with all things Dan Benson, by the way? If you've got any social media platforms or a website that people can look at to see what you're up to in the future, other than listening to this show, of course, to find out what's going on.
Thank you for the implied welcoming me back. My website is danielmbenson.com. You can find updates there. Also, my Patreon. I put something new on it every day because of the serialization, but I put other things once a week. I have a newsletter that comes out on my Patreon, and then it's mirrored on Substack and on my website once a month. I'm on Twitter and Facebook. I'm on DeviantArt as well, and Tumblr. So I'm in lots of places.
A plethora of ways to get a hold of you, Dan. Thank you very much for talking to us this afternoon. The floor is yours to say anything else that you want to about the book, about The World's Other Side, before we call time on this particular episode. So say what you want, and I'm going to give you as much time as you like, pretty much, within reason.
The endless possibilities.
Pretty much.
I could make alternate history jokes about what I could have said. Well, you were talking earlier about some of the scenes in The World's Other Side are uncomfortable. And yes, and yes, they are.
As well as the furniture.
Right, because this is a whole other thing. But it turns out that people who sit in chairs a lot end up with short Achilles tendons, and they can't squat with their heels on the ground the way that people can if they haven't grown up sitting in chairs. And so actually, Bounce and her host family can't sit in the same furniture. And this is a barrier to their learning about each other and spending time together. So it's physically uncomfortable. It's also emotionally and culturally and spiritually uncomfortable. There's a lot of uncharitable thoughts going through people's heads. Sometimes they even say them out loud. I do promise my readers that they see the light at the end, they develop as characters. But I think that's something important. You know, I live in Bulgaria. I've lived here for 15 years, and I'm still sometimes uncomfortable. And I've learned to enjoy those situations, at least after the fact. It's like exercise, you know. It's not pleasant at the beginning, but after you've done it for a long time, you get stronger.
What a positive note to round off on, Dan. Thank you very much for your time today.
Thank you very much for inviting me.